The latest episode of the Next 5 podcast is all about health prevention and vaccines. I speak to Kate Hashey at GSK.
For every dollar invested in improving health, there's an economic return of $2 to $4.
Murray Aitken at IQVIA Institute for Human Data Science.
The benefits of adult vaccination are compelling.
And David Sinclair at the International Longevity Centre.
Preventable conditions amongst those aged 50 to 64 in the UK cost $27 billion a year.
Listen to the full episode of the Next 5 wherever you get your podcasts.
The FT.
Welcome to Banking Weekly from the Financial Times with me, Patrick Jenkins. Joining me in the studio today are Daniel Schaefer, investment banking correspondent, Jennifer Thompson, retail banking correspondent, and Brooke Masters, our chief regulation correspondent. This week, we'll take a look at Wall Street bank earnings last week. We'll discuss British lenders' attempts to have a deadline imposed for claims over the mis-selling of payment protection insurance. And finally, we'll look at the effect that a change in bank capital rules will have on the property market. First, though, Daniel, to the US banks. We had most, if not all of them, reporting last week. And it was a fairly mixed bag, I suppose, on most fronts. But what did you come away with? Were you heartened at all by the resilience of some of these franchises?
I wouldn't say I was heartened. The first point I have to make is that actually revenues and earnings in the fourth quarter have improved across the board.
Yeah, exactly.
And what we've seen is that all banks, apart from Citigroup, have actually beaten expectations. So Bank of America has, Morgan Stanley has, Goldman Sachs has, and JP Morgan has.
Yep.
And Citigroup is sort of a special case, I would say, firstly because they were hit disproportionately by mortgage litigation, but also because Mike Corbett, the new CEO, is sort of doing what every new CEO does, which is the kitchen sinking everything that, you know, that's bad, and then to have a clean start.
So there's a big legal bill in there, and also kind of maybe more hits to credit impairments.
Yes,
this time.
But one has to say, despite improving results, the overall levels, if I look at investment banking in particular, are still very low if you look at it from a historical perspective.
Yeah.
And so what banks are doing now is they're cutting compensation pay.
Yeah, we saw that right across the across Wall Street, really,
yes,
didn't we?
That's been really the main trend is across Wall Street banks are starting to quite drastically reduce pay.
You're just going to say about Goldman Sachs.
Yeah.
By the end of the third quarter, I think I'm right in saying, they were the only bank across Wall Street that had accumulated more in their bonus pot than they had the previous year. And yet, by the end of the year, they decided actually to eat into that.
Yes, they did.
Pretty aggressively.
They actually put the foot on the brake massively in terms of pay. Their compensation to revenue figure ratio went down to 21%.
Right.
And that's the lowest they had since they went public. So it's really, you know, it's the lowest quarterly level we've seen.
That'll be a blow to bankers, I'm sure, especially after the ones in the UK have been hit by this idea that they might have had their bonus payments deferred until the new tax year to save on the higher rate tax rate. And yet,
yes,
backed away from that.
Yes.
So a double blow. What about the other banks? Were they doing similar things?
Yes, they are. I mean, everyone is. I mean, JP Morgan has kept it sort of stable.
Yeah.
So the ratio revenues, compensation revenues at JP Morgan is stable, but Citi has reduced it slightly. Morgan Stanley is reducing it and also deferring more than they have done in the past.
Yeah.
And what we've also seen is that CEO pay at some banks, at least notably JP Morgan, is going down. Jamie Dimon, the CEO, who had to take part responsibility for the London Whale accident, so the wrong-gone credit derivative bet that JP Morgan made, and that led to a $6.2 billion loss.
Yeah.
And his bonus was halved to $10 million.
I suspect that's a trend that we're likely to see reflected in European bank earnings over the next few weeks, aren't we? As there's a lot of accidents that CEOs are going to have to pay for over the coming weeks. One of the ones we know about is RBS's chief executive giving up his bonus over an IT disaster last summer, but there will be more, I'm sure.
Basically, everything what we've seen with the US banks now, we will see in the next few weeks at the European banks, but in an amplified and much stronger way.
Right.
They will cut pay more because they're under more regulatory pressure to do that, and not only investor pressure as the US banks. Also, their revenues are not as strong as the US banks, which have a better home market.
Yeah.
And also because of the whole litigation issue, the things they had, like mis-selling scandals, LIBOR scandal, etc., we will see more in terms of executive pay being cut at the European banks.
We'll watch it very closely. Thanks, Daniel. Our second topic for the day is the maybe conflicting trends that are kind of emanating in the retail market in the UK. I mentioned in the introduction that there was an initiative to impose a deadline of May 2014 for customers to make claims over mis-selling compensation following the PPI scandal. At the same time, in a separate development, the British Bankers Association is pushing this idea of something like an ethics board to help revive, I suppose, trust in the banking industry. Jennifer, do you think those two initiatives, maybe slightly ill-timed that they come together, because they seem to contradict each other? I suspect putting a deadline on PPI claims is not going to do anything to help restore trust in the banks, is it?
It was rather poor timing, yes. I suppose the banks would argue that at the start of the week, the initiative they announced, this sort of creation of an independent banking standards review council or ethics board. This is something looking to the future, whereas at the end of the week, the news we had on PPI and how the banks are lobbying for an earlier deadline on claims to be made, this is dealing with very much the legacy issues. But yes, absolutely, the juxtaposition was unfortunate for them.
So where is it going to go from here, particularly on the standards board? It's an interesting idea. The banks are saying there needs to be an independent panel, to a bit like the kind of general medical council in the medical profession, to restore trust that bankers are decent sorts.
Yes, I mean, it's not clear where that will go. It's certainly true that, you know, bankers for the past few months now have been, you know, speaking loud and clear about the need to restore trust in their industry. And it's rather telling that they're saying that this board or this body, you know, will need to be completely independent. So, you know, they've kind of moved away from, you know, just pure self-regulation. And, you know, the language itself was rather punchy. You know, there was talk perhaps of a blacklist for employees to prevent them from working in the city again.
Sorry, come back on what you were saying about self-regulation. Obviously, there is outside regulation through the Financial Services Authority, but you mean in terms of ethical standards of
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. This is talking about an ethical code and how sort of the industry will police itself. But they made it quite clear that this would not be run solely by bankers, that it needs to be independent in order to restore trust.
I think it's part of the exercise by the BBA, really, to reinvent itself as something that's more connected to society, isn't it? They're setting up these consumer panels and so on to stop themselves being a body that's just bankers talking to bankers.
Yeah. I mean, you know, banks are making much of talking about customer and customer needs, but of course, at the same time, the biggest customer at the minute for many people will be redress for PPI. And I mean, that's a whole can of worms when you talk about things like claims management companies and, you know, so the ethics,
yes,
you know, of people
true.
Getting redress, of course. But, you know, overall, there is sort of, it is pretty much the consensus view that PPI was widely missold. And obviously, you know, kind of a sense that the banks are trying to curtail the window for people to seek redress has not gone down particularly well with many consumer groups.
Just a final word, because I know one of the lines on this was that the banks were talking to the Financial Services Authority about trying to persuade, I suppose, the regulator to support this idea of a deadline for payments. Where is that going? Because the FSA was fairly cautious in its response to that.
The FSA has been absolutely crystal clear on this. It is willing to consider the proposal. That does not mean it is, you know, either positive or negative towards it. It just means that it wants to hear from all parties concerned. That will obviously mean consumer groups as well as bankers. You know, this does not mean that an official consultation has been opened, if that ever does go ahead. So it really is at a very, very tentative stage. And obviously there are certain legal and statutory hurdles that would have to be overcome if at any point in the future, you know, the banks got their way and this statute was curtailed.
I suppose it should be pointed out that one reason the regulator might be interested in putting a deadline on this is because the mounting cost of it to the banking industry, 12 billion for the big banks so far, is actually potentially undermining to their capital positions, their financial strength. So there's kind of, they're torn between the conduct side of things and the solidity of the system. So on to our third topic, a quick one on the capital rules around property. Brooke, you were looking at this as, again, a UK story, but with international significance, I think. Banks in the UK basically being required by the regulator to switch to a new method to calculate the riskiness of property loans.
Basically, under the global rules, regulators have always had the option to require banks to use this new method called slotting rather than their own internal models. There are about five or six classes of loans that you can do this for. Nobody uses it. The UK is one of the first countries to say, actually, we don't trust banks' internal models on, in this case, commercial property. And so we're going to make them use the slotting method instead.
Which is basically a standardized methodology.
It's much more standardized. It's not as standardized as the standardized methodology, right, which is what little banks use.
Yeah.
But this could well become a trend in that, you know, for things like what's called object finance, so airplanes, boats, that sort of thing, and project finance. There's the same problem, which is that the models don't work very well for big, chunky loans, of which there aren't a lot of like-to-like comparisons.
Yeah.
And it could well be the solution for regulators who at the moment are very grouchy about the fact that banks are holding vastly different amounts of capital against similar projects.
Now, there's some idea that this move could exacerbate the kind of north-south divide in terms of property prices, particularly London versus the rest of the country. Is that right?
Because basically slotting means you divide all your commercial property loans into four categories, which range from low risk to high risk. Prime London property is low risk. Retail developments in impoverished northern cities are high risk. So you basically have to hold five times as much capital against, you know, a retail development somewhere up in Leeds as you do against the Shard.
Right. It sounds a bit like the snowfall divide, where we've had certainly some in London, but maybe lots more in more provincial parts of the country. On that rather tenuous weather analogy, we should wrap up for this week. All that's left for me to do is to thank Daniel, Jennifer and Brooke for their contributions, and to thank you for listening. Remember, you can keep up to date with all of the latest banking stories at ft.com/banking. Banking Weekly was produced by Connor Sullivan. Until next week, goodbye.
For more downloads, go to ft.com/podcasts.
Join Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin for a new edition of the Capital Ideas Podcast. In unscripted conversations with investment professionals, you'll hear real stories about successes and lessons learned, informed by decades of investment experience. It's your look inside one of the world's largest asset managers. New episodes are available monthly. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Invest 30 minutes in an episode today. Published by American Funds Distributors, Inc.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.